Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Gentlemen, introducing the talk radio show host who moonlights as a talk radio show parasite, the inimitable, the pugtastic, the employophobic, the most obtrusive impartial observer since Operation Mockingbird, the broke-ass activist with a sense of entitlement, broadcasting from an abandoned Masonic lodge at the fluoridated Agenda 21 corporate dictatorship pseudo-death camp of Auckland, New Zealand. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting to you live from New Zealand, the allegedly least corrupt country in the world that is also the second largest mention in 11 million documents released in the Panama Papers and got mentioned like 64,000 times as a place where money launderers launder their money. With that, uncorrupt, ladies and gentlemen, or more properly, we're the best in the world at concealing our corruption from the rest of you people. Now, my very special guests are from Australia and the UK, respectively, and today we're going to be talking about fluoride in particular, New Zealand's new law that it's planning on passing to make it a finable offence to not forcibly medicate the population with dangerous hazardous chemicals in the water supply. Maybe I'm summing it up a little bit too fast or whatever, but that's what a shock jock is here to do. Dr. Paul Connett from the Fluoride Action Network, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny.
And also Maria Claudianos, I hope I pronounced that correctly, from Australia. Maria, welcome.
Thank you. Yes, thanks very much.
All right. Now, for those of us who are actually unfamiliar with the legislation, who would like to break it down for us and what New Zealanders are actually facing with this new kind of affront by the fluoride lobby?
Yes, well, I would break it down this way, that the activists who have been working against fluoridation diligently for a number of years with success have become the victims of their own success. Instead of the government allowing democracy to take its place and to continue and allow communities to decide whether or not they're going to fluoridate, personally, I think only the individual should be able to decide whether they take fluoride into their body. But at least you get a little bit closer to democracy when communities decide. Now the government wants to give the authority to fluoridate over to the district health boards, bureaucrats. And it's a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, because basically the district health boards are going to follow the directions of the Ministry of Health. So basically what you're looking at is mandatory fluoridation in New Zealand by stealth. And of course, that's got some communities like Christchurch and Nelson that have never been fluoridated, have wonderful water. In Christchurch, they don't even have to add chlorine. It got them very, very upset thinking about what it's going to mean to have the government force fluoridation onto them after resisting it for decades.
And Maria, are similar measures being passed in Australia, or is there any precedent for this kind of mass medication type thing?
Yes, there is. There is, sorry to interrupt Maria, I had to go back. There is a precedent. Ireland has had mandatory fluoridation since the 1960s. At 73% of the population is now drinking fluoridated water. Singapore has mandatory fluoridation. Israel has been backwards and forwards with mandatory fluoridation. The last Minister of Health stopped the mandatory fluoridation, but the new Minister of Health wants to instigate it again. So there are very few countries in the world that actually fluoridate, number one, and even fewer that have mandatory fluoridation for pretty obvious reasons. I mean, most countries don't take lightly to having the government force them to drink medication.
Unless, of course, the government is adept at running propaganda campaigns and making people think that forcing you to take something is actually not only your choice, but good for the community and community values and so on and so forth. You go through this whole repertoire. Now, I'm also aware that maybe for the first time, people may not be aware of you two, who you are and what you do. I'd like to briefly get your, you know, backgrounds and so on and so forth so that people know who they're listening to. Maria, would you start, please?
Sure. I'm actually a dentist, and I've been a dentist since when I graduated, which was in 2003. In my career, I've worked in both fluoridated and non-fluoridated areas in Australia, and during that time, I was never comfortable with the idea of the forced medication scenario that fluoridation basically is doing to the citizens of wherever the place is, and I thought it was highly unethical. But when I actually saw that there was not very significant difference between areas that were fluoridated and non-fluoridated as far as what I saw in, you know, the amounts of decay, regardless of whether it was a low socioeconomic background or a high socioeconomic background, there was really nothing outstanding to me saying that there was a major difference between the fluoridated and non-fluoridated areas. So that reinforced my ambition to get the message out there that I don't believe fluoridation is all that it was cracked out to be. I don't believe that it has helped, and I think that there are some serious risks when you look at the research, especially in modern times, that, you know, fluoridation is basically putting people's health at risk, really, because you can't control the dose that someone ingests every day. And that's where I'm coming from. But I still practice dentistry. I'm a general dentist, and essentially I'm just helping get that message out there.
And I'm sure that's actually good for your patients as well, coming in, hearing a dentist say, you know, fluoride's not all it's cracked up to be. You see that white mottling on your teeth there, that fluorosis, that's caused by the fluoride, and it's kind of almost as bad as tooth decay when you look at it, isn't it?
At university, we were taught that exactly what dental fluorosis was. I think, you know, going back 50, 40 years earlier, I don't think it was as much appreciated, and there are certainly... There have been dentists who weren't aware of how to detect fluorosis. There are different forms of it, but essentially it is the damaged crystalline structure of tooth enamel when there has been too much fluoride ingested during that developmental time of the enamel. So I don't go into conversations with all my patients. I leave that up for the patient to ask me those questions. However, I will point out in a dental exam to a parent or to the patient themselves if they do have fluorosis so that they can understand how to best manage that and how to avoid further degradation of their teeth.
Now, Dr. Paul Connett, if you would please give the audience a little bit of introduction about yourself, who you are and what you do.
I'm a retired professor of chemistry. I retired in 2006. I first got involved in fluoridation in 1996, 6 at the request of my wife. I didn't want the issue. I thought that people opposed to fluoridation were Looney Tunes. But when I started to read the literature, I realized that they weren't. They hadn't confused fluoride with fluorine, a compound of containing fluorine with the element fluorine. They hadn't done that. And the thing that struck me so much 21 years ago was just how active fluoride is. It's a very reactive biological species as far as biology is concerned. The lowly fluoride ion that I perceived rather like common salt, comparing common salt with chlorine, you can compare fluoride with fluorine gas. It's very different chemically, but biologically it's very, very active. And the central fact, which I've nurtured now for 21 years and shared with everybody I can, is how low the level is in mother's breast milk. It's extremely low. Now this means that if fluoride is supposed to be good for you, if the dentists think it's good for teeth, then what they are saying is that every woman is deficient in fluoride on this planet. They're all deficient because there's so little in mother's milk. 0.004 parts per million, according to the National Research Council in the United States. 0.004 parts per million. To put that into perspective, if you fluoridate in New Zealand about 0.8, 0.9, somewhere around that region, your baby is, and you make up formula with tap water, as millions do, you're going to give your baby about 200 times more fluoride than nature intended. And that's only the beginning of this story. So we've actually got two stories here, both important. One is there's no known use for fluoride inside. Argument of value to the source of the teeth, but there's no argument that anything useful inside the body, there's not one biological molecule, one process which needs fluoride to function properly. That's one set of facts. The other set of facts is it's extremely dangerous to biology. Fluoride interferes with hydrogen bonds, with metal ions, with enzymes, with G proteins, and there's a whole review article by Barbier from 2010 or 12. I've forgotten the date at the moment. But it's very toxic, and therefore you understand why nature has kept it away from the newborn baby and how utterly reckless it is for people to put it in the drinking water, where inevitably people are exposed to it. And as Maria has said, once you put a medicine, any medicine, but including fluoride, into the drinking water, you can't control the dose. You can't control who gets it. It goes to everybody. It's totally indiscriminate. Those two things should knock it out right there from a pharmaceutical point of view. And then lastly, it violates the individual's right to informed consent. No government has the right to force an individual to take medicine. It's enshrined in various human rights laws, international human rights. You're not allowed to experiment on people. This whole thing is ludicrous. It's bizarre. And to make it even more bizarre, instead of using pharmaceutical grade fluoride, that you kind of thing you get in your toothpaste, they're using a hazardous waste product of the phosphate fertilizer industry, which contains all kinds of contaminants, including, for some sources, trace amounts of radioactive isotopes. Again, every way you look at this practice, it is foolish.
Now, you say that it's not pharmaceutical grade. Now, I want to back up this just a little bit here, because I understand that there is a number of educated people that listen to this show, people who have been listening to me for years and years about all sorts of issues, but as soon as I bring up fluoride, they go, Vinny, you're all of a sudden crazy. Right? And this is the block wall that we're dealing with. And I want to understand your thought process when you went from that specifically, because you used to think that people who question fluoride were Looney Tunes themselves. How did that thought process change from that to what you're doing now? I mean, specifically, did you have to reevaluate yourself? Did it destroy your belief systems? Did you go through some kind of like shock or difficult in faith in the system? Anything like that?
Absolutely. It's changed my whole perspective on society. I mean, if you want an education, get involved with fluoridation. You'll get one hell of an education. And it's a disturbing and upsetting education. And that is, you can't trust your government health agencies in fluoridated countries. You can't trust the Ministry of Health in New Zealand, in Australia, in England, in Ireland, in Canada, in the United States. They're all lying through their teeth when it comes to fluoridation. And it's partly this, you know, you could see this as incredibly evil and they've got some horrible purpose in it. But in a sense, it's the banality of evil. When policy is king, Vinny, science becomes a slave. And it's a very horrible experience of trying to deal with, individuals, but professional bodies and health agencies. When science is no longer king, when science has become a slave. And the simplest way to explain a lot of the silly things which are happening with this practice in New Zealand, in Australia, and America and other countries, the few countries that practice fluoridation, 97% of Europe does not, thank God, is that the simplest way to explain is they're working backwards. For some reason, this policy of fluoridation has to be protected. Let me give you an example of where you see a policy having to be protected. In 2014 in this country, the Department of Health here, Ministry of Health, chose two very prestigious people, Sir Peter Gluckman. 600 papers just recently was given some prestigious award. And Sir David Skegg, head of the Royal Society of New Zealand. Oh my gosh. These people just drip credentials. And I think from the New Zealand's point of view, probably integrity. They were given onerous time reviewing the safety of fluoridation, looking at the literature on fluoridation. And when I read their review from 2014, I nearly fell off my chair because the first thing I went to was their review of neurotoxicity. Let me back off a second. There are over 300 studies which indicate that fluoride is neurotoxic, over 100 animal studies, 50 IQ studies. 50 out of 57 studies shows that young children exposed to fluoride have lowered IQ from those that are not exposed to fluoride or more fluoride and so on. Now they said there have been reports of studies from China talking about lowered IQ, but they said, and they referred now to the meta-analysis from Harvard, the reduction in IQ was less than one IQ point, less than one IQ point. And that was probably an artifact and of no practical significance. I said, oh my God, these prestigious people, they haven't read this paper. They haven't read this review. What they're reviewing is a propagandist interpretation of that. And the mistake that was made early on, which confused half a standard deviation with half an IQ point. So a lot of the promoters are going around saying that the IQ drop in these Chinese studies is only half an IQ point, when in fact it was half a standard deviation, which is 7 IQ points. Now that was bad enough. It was bad enough for Sir Peter Gluckman and Sir David Skegg to put their names to this piece of junk. But then when they went to correct it, it was because they were made a laughing stock by the New Zealand fan people, the fluoride-free New Zealand people pointed this out. So they made a correction. But guess what they did? They changed less than one IQ point in the original to less than one standard deviation. They didn't even pay the courtesy to the ordinary person of explaining what half a standard deviation was. less than one standard deviation. They didn't explain that that was 7 IQ points, which is outrageous. That's the first thing. But the second thing is they didn't change the rest of the sentence. The rest of the sentence read before, less than one IQ point of an artifact of no practical significance. They change it to less than one standard deviation and leave the sentence intact. This is an artifact. No practical significance. My God, a loss of 7 IQ points in a population would easily halve the number of geniuses in your society and easily double the number of mentally handicapped. No practical significance? I mean, this is taken possibly, given the benefit of a doubt, of a genuine mistake, and taken it to crude propaganda. Crude propaganda. And that's practically, it's used it, taking prestigious people with titles and make the puppets for crap. Absolutely unadulterated scientific crap. I will now tell you what I really think.
Well, when you get into a profession, you go through the process of indoctrination into that profession of any kind, whether you be a dentist or a professor of toxicology or a talk radio show host, you become part of a group of different people with you identify with. And when you start to question the main narrative of that particular industry, you then get the, I don't know if it's chastisement or persecution or what the right word is to it, but your colleagues don't seem to understand that you've come to a conclusion based upon looking at the evidence in many cases, and they don't come around. And it does indeed have a emotional impact, and it can lead in many activists to depression and feelings of helplessness and rage against not only the people around them in their own professions, but also against themselves. Now, I wonder if this, if there's a connection here between fluoride lowering IQ and fluoridated populations supporting fluoridation. You know, like, has it made you just a little bit less bright that you can't see the truth about fluoridation because it's working that effectively, you know?
Well, I think people can feel more apathetic about, you know, anything, really, when they feel suppressed in some way, whether it's being just chronically fatigued or just a little bit tired, not much time to spend thinking about things or even discussing issues or reading new ideas. People would rather just not have to find that stress in anything controversial in their lives. I must say that in my time and experience with this issue of fluoridation and speaking to people at levels of government, I was quite surprised to come to this realization that there are many people who are going to act accordingly depending on the situation that they're in. And that means that if they truly believe that something is not right, that doesn't mean that they will express that belief when they are performing their job or activity or behavior that they're meant to do. So it's very hard for even people in positions of power or authority or perceived positions of power or authority where changes should be made. Those people in those positions often tend to not be able to express what they truly think and believe for fear of, as you were talking about, some kind of discrimination or even loss of their job and their income as a result. So it's a strange political scenario which has not benefited society in one way, shape or form. I think it's quite different way. It's a path of progression and it certainly takes away the freedoms that we should be entitled to, our civil rights.
You see, so science depends upon truth, honesty, integrity, and when you take those away from science, then it's useless. And when you take science away from the health, the administration of health, public health in particular, it's disastrous. And I think we'll pay a huge price for this. But I would hesitate to ascribe motivations like they are fluoridating in order to dumb down the American public or the Australian or the New Zealand public.
That's just a happy coincidence.
I think it's far more banal. What?
Well, that's just a happy coincidence, at least.
No, I don't. I think today the big problem is the difficulty of changing a bureaucracy. You can't change it from below. Bureaucrats quickly learn that if they're going to progress in the bureaucracy, they don't make waves, which translates into obeying orders. You don't challenge policy. I think it's very serious when policy becomes king, then science becomes a slave. That's what ultimately is happening here.
I was talking on Facebook.
People are swallowing
The other day, and I was saying that science is about knowledge, right? The quest for truth, and religion, on the other hand, is about belief, right? One can back up what they're saying with objective evidence, right? And the other repeats itself until you stop questioning it. Now, a lot of people didn't get what I meant by that phrase, is that in many cases, science has now been turned into a religion. Certain scientific arguments actually appear to be trying to convince you that there's a hell you will go to if you don't believe it, and that there is a heaven you can achieve by believing it without question, right?
The easy life. I remember, Vinny, I was still teaching at the time. This was a couple of years before I retired before 2006. And I was crossing the quadrangle and I bumped into the Spanish teacher. And you know how you normally say, how are you, Steve? Hi, how are you? And you pass on, you know. How are you? Fine. Well, this time I actually told him the truth. He says, how are you, Paul? And I said, actually, I forgot. This is for Steve. I said, Steve, I'm feeling bloody awful. He said, what do you mean? He was really taken aback. What do you mean? I said, well, I don't want to teach chemistry anymore. What? And he's a professor of chemistry. I don't want to teach chemistry. What are you talking about? Why don't you want to teach chemistry? And I said, well, you know, I teach my students the scientific method and the importance of integrity and following the facts wherever they take them. You do the experiment first and then find out what happens. You don't, as you go with religion, you don't have a faith and work backwards to fit the facts to that faith. And so I said, you know, I want to teach the students this, but today, I know that they're going to leave the classroom and they're going in which see torn up either by economic interest or by the government itself, and that is so stressing. It completely disorientated me. It took away the meaning of teaching science, as far as I'm concerned, and it. I think most scientists avoid this. They avoid this confrontation with society. They avoid this confrontation with authority. And in terms of how we most see it practiced every day in the religion of fluoridation is the use of endorsements. The fluoridation is endorsed by X, Y, Z, D. They are using authority in the same way as religion uses authority. You believe it because these people believe it. You don't believe it because you've actually studied it, read the papers, etc. That's a very bad way to train professionals And if you now look at this and look at it as the dental school, look at the dental curricula of universities in the fluoridated countries. They're only getting one side of this debate, only one side of this. And it goes worse. That's dentists. Okay. They're only getting one side. That's outrageous from an academic point of view. Now take medical schools. Doctors, by and large, doctors in the fluoridated countries do not learn that there are people sensitive to fluoride. They have no idea what most doctors have no idea whatsoever what the symptoms are of someone that's very sensitive to fluoride. At one end of the normal distribution curve, response to fluoride, those people right down at the most sensitive end, doctors have no idea. So doctors now all over the fluoridating world are treating people with ointments and pills, what else, unable to treat these symptoms because they're not dealing with the cause. It's a serious thing.
I think there's also a lack of understanding about skeletal fluorosis.
Yeah.
And that's a huge problem. There's also a definite percentage of the population that are allergic to fluoride itself. Mm-hmm. And I actually spoke to a GP and I said, look, I think this lady needs to be tested for how much level of fluoride is in her blood plasma or tissue fluid. And can you get a test done? And there was no test available that this GP could find in Australia to be able to test the levels of fluoride in her body. So that basically was an example of how little is being taught about the medical aspects and influences and health influences that fluoride ingestion has on a human.
Vinny, we have two defenses against fluoride after the breast milk. Breast milk protects the baby, number one. But after that, mammals have two defense mechanisms. One is the kidney. The kidney excretes fluoride as much as it can. The kidney typically excretes about 50% of the fluoride from the body very quickly. And the rest, by and large, gets deposited, sequestered in the bone. I believe that's a defense mechanism, sequestering the fluoride in the hard tissues. You're getting the fluoride away from the delicate machinery, away from the enzymes, away from the proteins, away from all kinds of biological apparatus, and sequestering it in the bone. But the trouble with that, and this is what Maria is talking to when she talks about skeletal fluorosis, if you go to places in India and China, you see the kids all have dental fluorosis. And then the adults in the same village who are drinking the same water get skeletal fluorosis. And some of them very, very serious, crippling. They're bent over double. Now, in terms of a fluoridated country, you're drinking and destined in New Zealand to drink fluoridated water all your life. So all your life, every day, 50% of the fluoride is being deposited in your bone. And we know what happens. In the beginning, when the fluoride deposits in your bone and the connective tissues, you get symptoms identical to arthritis. Ding, 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 ding. You've got millions of people in New Zealand with arthritis. There's not one study in New Zealand to see if there's any relationship between the prevalence of arthritis and how much fluoride they're exposed to. And if the fluoride continues to accumulate in the bone 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, and so on, then the bone gets harder but more brittle. And then we're worried about hip fractures in particular for the elderly.
Mm. Now, on top of that, just a little bit of language here. What does arthritis mean, ladies and gentlemen? In Latin, it means joint pain. Okay?
Yeah.
It's not complicated. It's pretty straightforward. Yeah. You've got a whole bunch of toxins that are being accumulated in your bones and your joints. Your joints are going to get painful, right?
Yeah.
Asked and answered. There you go. There's a little bit of Vinnie Eastwood wisdom there for you. Now, on top of this, we talk about the industry, like the phosphate fertilizer industry. Getting rid of this slurry that comes out of these things is ridiculous. Okay, dude, ladies and gentlemen, let me just give you a picture. Imagine a pit of chemicals that you can see from space, and that you've got to get that huge amount of chemicals deposited somewhere safely so that you don't have to just keep it there in the open slurry pits, right? Okay. Now you figure out two things. Firstly, you've got to dispose of it very, very carefully because it's toxic waste and that's incredibly expensive to have the mandatory protection standards and environmental regulations that govern your business. Okay, so that's not appealing to you. On the other hand, there's this vagary in the law that allows you to dump toxic waste into the human water supply if you sell it to the council first. Because then it's no longer toxic waste that's hazardous to humans. It's a product that has some kind of perceived benefit. All right. Now, being cynical and being jaded, I was told by a very good friend of mine, is one of the two greatest hallmarks for a journalist. Because that's what will happen to you if you've got your eyes open. And I saw this really great quote. It says, "When plunder becomes a way of life for a group of men living together in society, they create for themselves in the course of time a legal system that authorizes it and a moral code that glorifies it." That's from Frederick Bastiat. And I have got that as my Facebook profile kind of thing because we need to be reminded that just because something is in a position of authority doesn't necessarily mean that that position of authority is justified or justifiable in its actions. But anyway, Paul, go ahead.
You asked me another question, Vinny. I'm just speechless with that. That's a great quote.
Totally.
I'm going to say it one more time. When plunder becomes a way of life for a group of men living together in society, they create for themselves in the course of time a legal system that authorizes it and a moral code that glorifies it. Okay, and the man Peter Dunne comes to mind when you think about a man who plunders and a man who benefits from society looking the other way. He's been in Parliament for now 10, 15 years or so, and he is helping to push this new fluoride bill. He's got ties to the alcohol lobbies, the tobacco lobbies, and also he helped to try to usher under the rug the big Panama paper financial records leaks. Like we're talking about a man who's got the fingerprints of corruption all over him, right? Like the man is a walking orgy of evidence.
What about sugar? Is he involved with sugar?
One can only hope because he'd need a hell of a lot of it to make him appear very sweet.
Because, you know, 1 year before the U.S. Public Health Service mysteriously endorsed fluoridation in 1950, remember 1950 was bang in the middle of the trial, so no trials had been completed in 1950, and no health studies had been conducted of any significance. And U.S. Public Service, the U.S. Public Service, in fluoridation. Why? It's a mystery. It's a mystery. Obviously, political, not scientific. Well, one thing that happened before 1950 was in 1949, said, this is 133 sugar interests, the Sugar Research Foundation said, we need to find a way to reduce tooth decay without reducing sugar consumption. And the sugar lobby has been there all the time. More recent private papers indicate that the sugar lobby was playing around with the National Institute of Dental Research in the 1970s, keeping them away from researching into sugar and focusing on other things. Pretty sick. That's $1 billion industry right there that's benefited all the time, and probably the most harm that fluoridation has done is to get zillions of parents worldwide to take their eyes off keeping a control of the sugar consumption by their kids.
All reading
and now we're getting obesity and diabetes up the gazoo.
Well, and there's also the fact that sugar's been put into nearly every single thing on the supermarket shelves now, right? And as a dentist, Maria, right, teaching your patients about trying to restrict the amount of sugar and things like that, did that come during or after your dental training? Trying to say, hey, look, keep away from that sugar, darling. It's not a good thing.
In my years of dental school, we were certainly taught about the influences of sugar and dental health. There's actually an item number where you can, if you've had a consultation about nutrition or diet with your patient, you can use that item number to basically describe that service that you've given them. And, essentially, it's a big part of dentistry. It's well understood that it's not just teeth, and teeth are just, they're not just separate entities from the rest of your body. They're well connected to the rest of your body and heavily influenced by how you are on the inside. And that's obviously why, if people are eating healthy, they've got great nutritional, supplementation from the variety of foods they're eating, and certainly if the person or individual can absorb those nutrients well and utilize them in their body, they're going to be very healthy individuals. They'll have the best chance of having a good immune function, as well as obviously developing good strong teeth. One of the issues that I've come across with regarding fluoridation is and belief systems, that belief that was developed that and certainly still exists among a lot of the older generations, I find, with my patients, that they believe that without fluoride, they will have dental decay. And what was poorly understood in the past was that if you don't have those essential building blocks such as calcium and phosphate available, then your teeth can't maintain health. Fluoride, you can have as much fluoride as you like in your mouth or teeth exposed to fluoride, but without those essential building blocks to actually build tooth structure, fluoride can't do anything. And I'm talking about what happens when your teeth are in the mouth ready for use. So after they've been fully developed and after they're and they're visible and being used. So when that's the case in life, and we're all taught to brush our teeth, hopefully, fluoride doesn't necessarily have to be there. However, if it is there, it is meant to help catalyze that reaction of incorporating calcium and phosphate into the tooth structure at a very, very microscopic level. That's the whole point of it. And that's topical, you know, external surface application use of fluoride. Without those building blocks that I'm talking about, calcium phosphate being present, that fluoride or fluorine ion can't do anything. It won't have any effect whatsoever. It might disable enzyme functions and kill some bacteria. However, it's not going to build tooth structure by itself. And that's what seems to be very poorly understood by the layperson, obviously, and also even depending on when or how someone has studied that aspect of dentistry as well. There is a lot of new products now in dentistry which help remineralize tooth structure, and they're calcium phosphate amorphous type matrices that also employ the use of a protein called casein, and that's a dairy protein which has been found to really help with that process of remineralizing tooth structure. And that's where a lot of people who suffer acid erosion or a lot of wear on their teeth and they have sensitivity, they benefit quite a bit from these products which allow for, you know, a large amount of calcium and phosphate to be available for them to remineralize and build tooth structure microscopically. Okay. So.
No, you know, Vinny, before you talk, Paul, I just wanted to address one issue here. Is the I want it to be easy. I don't want to have to think a whole lot. I don't want to have to make an effort kind of response to this. Because if we don't have fluoride automatically in the water going down the drains when we're having a shower and going through our washing when we're cleaning it in the washing machine and getting all over our dishes and everything like that and not getting on our teeth, then what else are we going to do? How could we possibly have a better alternative than dumping toxic waste into the water supply for it to be good for my teeth. How, please, without thinking or making any effort, give me a solution.
The big lie is if you don't have fluoride, you're going to have kids having teeth removed under anesthesia, young children removed, having their teeth removed under anesthesia, which is both expensive and traumatic. And you'll see dentists and promoters, health officials, holding up big pictures of these dreadful teeth. And let me explain what this is. More often than not, these dreadful pictures of teeth, which lead to extractions under anesthesia, are what are called baby bottle tooth decay. And this is what happens when a baby is allowed to suck on a baby bottle, a sippy bottle, for hours on end. Now, that bottle might contain sugared water, Ribena, Coca-Cola, milk, whatever. But if the baby is allowed to fall asleep with this for an hour on end, what it does is to rot the top teeth to the gums, the top teeth to the gum, especially if there's Coca-Cola in it, which is also acid, to the gum. Now, the giveaway, by the way, there's no difference in the rate of baby bottle tooth decay between fluoridated and non-fluoridated communities if they're at the same income levels. You will see a difference between baby bottle tooth decay between low-income families and high-income families, because by and large in low-income families, the parents are so busy doing other things, getting a job, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They don't have so much time, and that's when the baby bottle is left in the mouth. But if you take two low-income areas, you'll find there's no difference in baby bottle tooth decay in the fluoridated and the non-fluoridated communities. So it's a lie. And the way that anybody can spot this lie, that when a dentist is holding up a case of baby bottle tooth decay, is to look at the bottom teeth. The top teeth look awful, awful, rotted to the gums in many cases. Bottom teeth are hardly touched because the tongue, during this sipping process of the baby bottle, protects the bottom teeth. And you know, this is how propaganda works in Queensland, Australia. The day before the Queensland government voted for mandatory fluoridation, every MP was sent a postcard. And on that postcard, it had four pictures. It had a picture of what teeth looked like. You had two photographs, one for the side, one for the top, of pictures with baby bottle tooth decay. And the legend was, this is what happens when children drink non-fluoridated water. Utter propaganda. And then on the right-hand side of the card, you had a baby having tooth extracted under anesthesia. So an absolute concocted garbage propaganda going to every MP before they voted for mandatory fluoridation. But I've seen it elsewhere. I've seen dentists and I've seen health officials hold up these baby bottle tooth decays. Real fear-mongering. They say that we're fear-mongering. You know, what's frightening is this kind of activity from civil servants. When civil servants step over from providing objective information to decision makers to being outright propagandists, that's what's scary.
Well, they're also trying to essentially tar us with a brush. Aldous Huxley had this really great quote. The propagandist's purpose is to make one set of people forget that certain other sets of people are human.
Yeah.
And indeed. I saw this the truth is the first thing to die in wartime, and I've come to the conclusion that we're currently in a form of silent war on many different fronts. Fluoridation, for my money, is a major front of this silent war, but I think that it occupies a very prominent place in the central part of what happens in society when people stop asking questions, start obeying authority without question, become essentially, just like science becomes a slave when it doesn't stick to its guns, the people become slaves when they're no longer informed as to who's running their society, why, and how. And it appears to me that it's an assault like a war crime, essentially, right? Like, isn't it a war crime to poison an enemy's water supply, right? Is it too extreme? Is it too extreme to put it in those terms?
It's a civil war. It's a civil war between the government and the people, I think. Civil war. If you turn to another subject, I'm not against vaccination in principle. But let me just, I heard a very, very excellent presentation by Robert J. Kennedy Jr., who is an environmental lawyer, is very, very concerned about mercury. He's had many successful lawsuits on mercury. And he was intrigued to begin with how the different regulatory bodies were handling mercury in the United States. From an environmental point of view, the EPA is very, very concerned about levels of fluoride, about mercury in fish. And their concern is that the pregnant woman shouldn't eat these mercury-containing fish because they give the mercury to the baby. Well, if you look at the levels of methyl mercury in those fish and the doses that the EPA is concerned about, those doses a few years ago were dwarfed by the levels of mercury in vaccine, thimerosal. The babies were being injected, 30 or 40 vaccines in the first few months of their lives, and the total amount of thimerosal, ethyl mercury, being injected to the baby was much, much higher than the EPA was concerned about in fish and what people ate.
And then when they went on from that, they said, oh, we're no longer adding fluoride mercury as a preservative in the vaccines afterwards. So they just put it in the production process in the first place before they added the preservatives and just left it in there anyway. You know, just that cynical sort of lying sort of crap that you were up against.
You talk about cynical. Let's compare this. You know, when we stop using leaded gasoline because of the toxicity of lead tetraethyl, we did that because we were frightened of the damage done to children's IQ. But it didn't stop the manufacturers like Ethyl Corporation near Ellesmere Port in near Liverpool continuing to produce the lead tetraethyl and exporting it to third world countries. So even though we knew it was going to damage those children's brains, we kept exporting it. Now, with apparently what Robert Kennedy said, is that the supplies of the thimerosal in the vaccines are now being exported to third world countries. Again, even though we know that those babies should not be injected with thimerosal, they're still being exported to third world countries. Again, this is evil. Now that we know, that is evil. And I think another thing which really pricked my ears up, his description of the Center for Disease Control was a cesspool of corruption. A cesspool of corruption. This is the same CDC that has a white coat and promotes fluoridation in the United States and is being quoted every day somewhere in the world by some health official or dentist or doctor or editor saying the Center of Disease Control in the United States says that fluoridation is one of the top 10 public health achievements of the 20th century. A cesspool of corruption when it comes to vaccines and the white-coated promoter of fluoridation when it comes to fluoride.
And as I like to say, it's all about what they hoped to achieve.
Yep. But one more scientific thing. The science must rescue us. I mean, for Robert Kennedy, he said he wanted to be a scientist before he was a lawyer. So he's always respected science, uses science in his cases, and he says if I didn't use the science properly, I wouldn't win those cases. One of the things that the promoters of the use of thimerosal in vaccines is that it's rapidly metabolized. And that has been seen by many people as why they claim that ethyl mercury is less toxic than methyl mercury. Ethyl mercury is thimerosal, okay? What Robert Kennedy explained is, yes, it is rapidly metabolized, but they don't find the mercury in the urine. It's metabolized rapidly, and guess where the mercury goes to? Into the brain. And So that, well, I'm a little off topic here, but well, not in the sense
that's of... That's what the Vinnie Eastwood show is for, going a little off topic. Okay, well, speaking of which, we only have a minute or so to wrap up the broadcast, so I'd like to get a couple of things from you guys, you know, your relevant website, so people can go and see more of your work and whatnot, and also maybe just like a one-minute recap of what this new law is being passed in New Zealand and what people should do to get more information about it, so on, that kind of thing.
Well, what they should do about it is to get hold of their MP immediately as a matter of extreme urgency and tell the MP not to vote for this parliamentary bill. Yes, and also to especially talk to the Green Party. I understand. I can't believe this. I cannot believe this, but the Greens support this bloody bill for mandatory fluoridation. Now, if you told me the Conservatives, the Liberals, and all those other people support it, probably wouldn't knock me over. But the Greens? If the Greens support this, they've lost any relevance as far as I'm concerned. I also believe they support 1080 from helicopters to kill possums. What has happened to the Green Party? What dark shade of brown have they become? I just can't believe this. I've talked to Green Party members in the past. And this is absolutely, utterly disgusting. So write your MP and tell the Green Party, if they vote for this, never, ever support the Green Party again.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to this broadcast where you get the tooth, the whole tooth, and nothing but the tooth. So help me, God. The Vinnie Eastwood Show. The only thing worse than the truth is Vinnie's jokes. And, if you would like to support this broadcast and the people that we give a platform to and that kind of thing, go to the homepage of thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news.
Welcome to the world's meeting place. American.
It's practically narcotic.
Freedom.
Oh, yes. I like very much
radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
And I hope people support American Freedom Radio. And I hope people vote with their dollars and really understand the value of having American Freedom Radio. Because that's my family. If you love me at all, Jack Blood, support American Freedom Radio. Like, my family has literally disowned me in American Freedom Radio. Danny and Don and those guys, those are my actual family. So please, please support these guys because they have all the technology, they have all these great things that they're gonna do, but obviously they can't do it all by themselves. So not only would I like to see you support them, I'd like to see you retweet them and repost them and really get involved and get on the bandwagon, so to speak, on doing that do-it-yourself promotion, because they're a do-it-yourself radio network, and we just need that so much.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
We all know that they're not telling us the truth. So stand up for your rights, demand the real medicine, and your right to use it and grow it. This is Rick Sensen, and you're listening to American Freedom Radio.
What has American Freedom Radio ever done for us? provide us with free education?
Well, that's obviously a factor, but apart from reversing the dumbing down of America...
All the information they provide is free?
What about the free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, man?
Exploiting commonplace corruption?
They help vulnerable people who don't have a voice?
Bringing light to important information nobody else does.
Or they never sent so hung up or cut off their guests?
Well, that's no fun, is it?
Oh, they created a fantastic alternative media source during an era of bad, manipulative, and infiltrated mainstream and alternative media shows and scum.
Okay, well, apart from the free education, free information, free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, exposing commonplace corruption, helping vulnerable people without a voice, bringing light to important information nobody else does, and creating a fantastic commercial-free alternative media source in a sea of bad, manipulative mainstream and alternative media shills and scum, what has American Freedom Radio ever done for us?
Donate to American Freedom Radio today.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.
Remember, remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
I pulled into Nazareth, was feeling about half past dead. So wake me up when it's all over. When I'm wiser and I'm older. All this time I was hurting myself and now. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Because I'm happy. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you.
Levity is good. It relieves tension and the fear of death.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio for your listening pleasure and whatnot in the wilds of New Zealand, the untouched, remote, totally corruption-free, utterly green and not polluted on like 70% of its beaches, and totally not in the ploy of the triads who own the major centres. None of that is going on, okay? Clean, green, and corruption-free, just so as the tourism ministry tells everybody outside of New Zealand and inside New Zealand. Now, everybody thinks they live in the greatest country in the world. New Zealanders call our country God's own. You know, it's, oh, mate, it's God's, you know, it's great. Americans think they're the greatest country in the world. I don't know what the hell the Canadians reckon of their country. Maybe they're just not that arrogant. But, and the Aussies reckon they're the lucky country. We all think we're really special. Now, here's the thing. We could either all wrong, or we might actually all be correct. Because some of the beautiful things that you see in every country are reflected in the people and the surroundings all around you at all times. Okay? But sometimes you don't see it because you're staring at your iPhone or you're having an argument with somebody about some issue that doesn't matter. Right? Maybe you're distracting yourself from the pain of living for such a period of time that you forget how to live. And only know how to distract yourself from the pain of living. Okay? I've been there. Anybody who's awake should have been there. And I believe that suffering is one of those requirements for living in this world and seeing it as it is, because it's only once all the lies have hurt you and all the authority figures have betrayed you that you suddenly start to see the gravity of the truth, the situation, that you can't trust people just because they've got a badge, just because they've got a title or something like that. Sometimes you need to look into their track record and think for yourself, and don't believe what they tell you. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. This is a listener-supported broadcast on AmericanFreedomRadio.com once a week at this point. And my very special guest joining me today, in webcam for the first time on the show, actually, is Max Egan, who appeared just earlier on the O'Challey Effect with Sherry Wisdom as well. Max, welcome to the program.
Nice to be here, Vinnie. Thanks for asking me on, brother. Good to see you back on air.
Oh, well, thank you. It's been some time, actually, like since September. Like, really? It
has been a while. It has been a while. Good to see you back. Good to see you back.
Yeah. It's not like I wasn't busy. It's not like I wasn't busy, though. You know? Mate, there's just, like, thousands of archives and stuff trying to update and all sorts of videos that I had never got around to making. It's just you shoot so much. You go on so many shows and you do so many shows that basically 90% of it never even gets up online for people to see again.
Absolutely. I've got the same problem. I've got archives there I've been trying to put together for the last 3 or 4 years, so I know exactly what you're going through with that.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen, eh, unless you, like, just take time off from making new things. But the thing is, people are always looking for new things. But I was of the belief that the things that we talk about on the radio shows and things like that, they're not, like, current events and current affairs and things like that. This is actual knowledge that will last you throughout the years.
Well, that's the thing.
It has an intrinsic value.
Well, it is. I mean, there's a lot of knowledge that gets put forth on the shows, but there's a lot of current events that need addressing as well. I mean, it's so hard to keep on top of things at the moment. Everything's moving so fast that kind of, you know, you have to come back on air just to keep on top of things and on track of things. Otherwise, when you do come back on, you're just going to have to do like a 10-hour show just to get back to square one, you know. So it's really, really been moving fast in the last few months since you've been off air. So, yeah, it's anybody's guess where we're going to go from this point. I think it's turned into a circus, the whole global political arena. But hopefully, it's a big wake up call for people. And I'm seeing a lot of people waking up. I'm seeing a lot of people questioning what's going on. So hopefully, we're going to move forward to something positive from here.
Mm. I turned away in disgust, out of stress, just going, "Look, bro, the truth movement's been totally compromised. All right, it's got a religious ideology that it's continuously pushing. All right, it's lying to people directly. All right, it's pushing people it knows are connected with the Jewish mafia. All right, I'm done. You know, like maybe it was my heart that gave out first, or maybe it was my mind, but it just broke me, mate.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of that. I mean, there's been a lot of divide and conquer mechanisms going forward, a lot of divide and conquer strategy in the whole so-called truth movement. There has a lot of psyops come into play. The monetization of YouTube as well has been a big contributing factor, I think. There's a lot of people sensationalizing their YouTube clips now, a lot of people presenting information which is sensational but not necessarily the truth because this has become their income. You know, and this is everything we were trying to defeat, you know, the economic system, the economic model. This is what we're trying to defeat, what we're trying to bring down. And now people have become enslaved to it in the truth movement as well. This is one of the reasons I've never monetized my YouTube account. You know, it's not about that. It's about bringing information to people and remaining objective through it all. And I'm not seeing that. I'm seeing a lot of people just jumping on this economic bandwagon, which has been very unfortunate. You know, people don't understand what a psyop is, you know, how a psychological operation works. And the monetization of YouTube has been a psychological operation. It has. It's shifted people's focus away from fact and, you know, shifted it more towards their bank account, unfortunately.
If it bleeds, it leads and that kind of thing. It's essentially grafting an economic model which the truth movement is overall rejecting onto itself, right? Isn't that just freaking brilliant? Right? Hey, you can introduce incentives that would make your own enemies your allies by becoming disinformation agents but out of their own choice for the money.
Yeah, well, it is. It's brilliant. I mean, the way they've run the whole thing is brilliant. I mean, it's easy to get to people. It's easy to know how to get to people. You know, and once people saw YouTube as a source of income, it really, really changed things. And, you know, people need to look at that. I mean, it's not about clicks. It's not about getting hits. It's about bringing the truth to people. It's about emancipation from slavery. And it's brought an enormous amount of division with people too, enormous amount of competition in the truth movement, in different channels competing with each other now to get more views and more clicks to get more income, you know, and there's no common focus. And this is one problem that we've always faced in this movement is the lack of focus, the lack of common focus. Now, those who are working to enslave humanity, the psychopaths who run things at the top, they all have different ideas. They all have different beliefs. They all have different belief systems. They have different religions. They have different nationalities. They don't care what their cohorts believe. They don't care if someone believes something completely different to what they believe. They all have that common focus of achieving this slavery system and putting it into place, and they all work very hard to achieve that goal. Whereas we in the so-called truth movement, we lock ourselves into our belief systems and our various rabbit holes, and we fight and argue amongst each other. We compete with each other to get to the top of the pile. We don't have any common focus. We don't have that common focus of freedom, and realize that all the people that are speaking out, be it you, be it me, be it anybody, we're all working towards the same thing. We all have the same common goal, which is freedom. We need to have that focus and stop competing with each other and realize that we're all on the same team here. And that's our biggest downfall, is our competitive nature. And this has been exacerbated by the monetization of YouTube and all the stuff that they've done to us to make us more focused on money and more focused on personal glory and wanting to be the latest guru rather than simply wanting to be free. You know, that's the problem. You know, we've lost that focus, if we ever had that focus. I think many of us probably had it to begin with, but it seems to have gone by the wayside for a lot of people. A lot of people have dropped the ball, especially with the latest, the Trump election and all this sort of stuff. A lot of the truth movement seems to have turned into a cheer squad for Trump these days, which is quite interesting as well. You know, everyone's embracing the state the way we've never seen. And that's quite amazing to see. And behind that, everything's still going on. Nothing's changed. Still playing us with chemtrails. They're still, you know, nanotech in the food. There's still the GM food out there. All the wars are raging. The smart grid's coming online. Nothing's changed. But everyone's arguing over the left-right paradigm. It's been a very clever play, very clever.
What's interesting to see is it's like the last 8 years never happened. Right. You saw the entire hope change spectacle of Obama and then betrays every single one of his promises and that kind of thing. And you thought that people saw that, right? But they didn't. They didn't even notice. It just went by without even a whisper. Every single election, hey, we tell you a whole lot of things that you really want to hear. Build that wall. And all of a sudden, people just drop their analytical skills. He said, build that wall? Really? Man, that's a straight talker right there. Right? And you're just thinking to yourself, dude, have you ever heard of like television, you know, entertaining people, shock value? You do realize it's the most encapsulating form of manipulating somebody's attention span, right? How long can they manipulate your attention span for? How long can you get you to focus on you? It's all a matter of how controversial your words are and how inflamed everybody gets. It's like you're getting played by a cheap, well, not a cheap marketer, but certainly a slippery salesman of some craft. I would know because I used to work with a lot of slippery salesmen. I tried to stay honest. That's why I can't do it anymore. That's why clicks don't really matter to me, because if somebody that I do a video for gets uploaded and they get a hell of a lot of hits, that's really, really nice. But I might see like, $10 out of it if it's really, really huge, like 50,000 views or anything, which barely ever happens. That's the thing. It's one source of passive income on top of all the other little sources of donations that I get from people, because I can't work for the purpose of just money. There has to be something greater. There has to be something more meaningful, and it has to be something that I don't personally benefit from involved, right? Giving somebody an hour, 2 hours of talk radio time when nobody will give them the light of day is, I think, a service, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely it is, and we need more of it, you know, and it shouldn't be about clicks and it shouldn't be about views, it shouldn't be about any of that stuff, you know. But there's been so much identity politics that have gone on with this whole Trump thing, and you know, hopefully people are going to see that he's not the be-all and end-all, he's not going to lead them to safety, they have to do it themselves. You know, it's so contrived, this whole thing's contrived, the way he's being presented as the struggling underdog. I mean, I don't think he's the struggling underdog at all. I think this is just being done to give his presidency some legitimacy and to get the truth movement what's filing behind him like a cheer squad the way they are. You know, I think it's all been a play. The whole thing's been a play. I think that he wouldn't be in the position that he is if he wasn't a player. And I think that it's still moving forward in the same agenda. It's all going forward. I haven't seen anything change at all. I think the things that he's doing on the ground, the election promises that he has fulfilled, these are things that, you know, obviously, I mean, I think America was allowed to deteriorate simply so he could come along and put a few patches and band-aids on it and get the people to rally behind him. I mean,
well, what specifically? He got rid of the TPP. I heard that one. I haven't really heard of anything else, though.
He's got the vaccinations investigated. He wants to have that investigated the way he said. He wants to get, you know, the immigrants and all this sort of stuff. But it's all theatre. It's all theatre, Vinny, for the masses. I mean, he's put a few little patches on there. He's saying, oh, yeah, I'm just fulfilling my election promises. But he's still posturing against Russia. I mean, this was all supposed to be repaired, wasn't it? Now he's posturing against Russia. He's posturing against Iran. He's still posturing against Syria. He's not calling that out for what it is. He's given Israel open slather. They've declared like thousands upon thousands of new settlements they want to build. So, you know, he's not really doing anything. And this whole concept that, you know, he's been wiretapped and it's Obama leading a coup against him. I can't believe how many people are buying into that. Obama's a puppet. He's a figurehead. He's a mouthpiece. Obama's not leading anything. If anybody's wiretapping Trump, it's whoever's behind Obama. It's not Obama. Obama's just another puppet, the same as all the other presidents. I can't believe how people are buying into all of this stuff, you know. I think there's so much.
Hold on one second. I want to address that point there because I hear it a lot. I don't believe and I can't believe why people are buying into this stuff. Well, I'm just like, I think maybe this part of the reason why I had to take such a long break is because I realized after studying what cult indoctrination techniques are and mind control techniques – and the way narcissists and psychopaths manipulate people, and you realize that they're all actually the same techniques, and they all have a very similar effect on the mind, the psyche of the victim. And as soon as I started to see that pattern, I started seeing it everywhere. I'm like, oh, my God, there's a narcissist who's on the internet who's telling everybody complete lies and getting himself really, really rich off of it and is working for other interests, right, than he says he is. And the people who are listening to this narcissist on the internet are getting themselves into trouble in many, many ways, mostly psychologically, because they're getting themselves hurt and damaged and molded by the narcissist into something he can use, something he can feed off, whether or not it's your admiration, your shares, your clicks, your money, your web rankings. It doesn't matter what it is. It wants it. And it knows many, many techniques of lying and repeating and being basically a scumbag in order to get you to believe the things you want to believe so that they can take everything that is good about you and turn it on yourself and eventually get rid of it and turn you into their property. And I see this pattern happening every frickin' where I look, man, every political debate that I see, every radio show that I'm listening to, you know, that it's like that bad. It's just varying degrees of what people are doing. Some people are doing it unconsciously. I realized that I was doing some of these techniques unconsciously, and I was like, okay, I'm going to stop that. You know, you have to reevaluate yourself once you have this new perspective about how a lot of the evils that we see in the world are actually something that we're probably doing right now.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, and a lot of people won't look at that. That's the problem, you know, and it is people being led by narcissists and people being led by sociopaths and people being led by people that are doing things for the wrong reason. You know, people that don't have a pure heart in what they're doing. And like I said, you know, I just can't believe how much of the truth movement and the so-called independent media is not looking at this objectively enough. So many people have just bought into this whole left-right paradigm and have jumped onto this statism bandwagon. It's incredible. Even the people that are saying, oh, this wiretapping has been run by Obama. I mean, hang on, look behind the scenes. You really think Obama's got any power? You really think Trump's got any power? You really think any of these people have any power? It's a puppet show. You know, what has suddenly caused people to stop looking behind the veil and think that presidents actually have power and that this is anything more than a puppet show? It's been phenomenal how this change has come about in so much of the independent media. They've just dropped their objectivity. They've just dropped the ball so badly on this one. It's incredible to see, you know, and it's kind of sorted out the wheat from the chaff in many ways, but you know, and I think a lot of it is people's egos have gotten in the way as well. I mean, the mainstream media has been flailing so badly, and there's so many elements now within the independent media that are kind of viewing themselves as, hey, we're the new mainstream, and they're really kind of they're believing their own press, and they're believing these great things about themselves, and they're letting their egos get in the way of their objectivity. It's been very sad to see, but I don't know. I mean, hopefully, it's just going to be. People are going to see it for the farce that it is. Hopefully people are going to see the opportunity this is giving us to realize that this is a complete freak show. I mean, here's a president with a Twitter account. He's really humanized the presidency in as much as that. I mean, this is like a guy on the street you could bump into down the road. You know, it's like any guy. It means it kind of got the view now that the president isn't this untouchable person up there on some pedestal. It's just some dude in a suit with a Twitter account. So, you know, it's humanized the whole thing. So hopefully that'll serve to empower people a little bit. Hopefully they'll see what a puppet show and what a freak show this is, what a bunch of bumbling fools there are actually running this world and how much they're profiting from people. So, you know, hopefully it's the opportunity that people will get out of this. You know, that's my great hope for this anyway. Hopefully this will expose the system as fast that it is, you know.
Putting them on a pedestal. Did you hear about the Podesta emails? You know, like right. And I was just like, you know, what would be a really, really great nickname? And I can't believe nobody's thought of it yet. Podesta the Molester.
Well, yeah, that's a good nickname for him. But I mean, what's been exposed through the Clinton emails and the Podesta emails and all of the exposing of DynCorp and all of this sort of stuff? I mean, we can see the system of human farming for what it is now. We can see this human trafficking rampant around the world. We can see the war of terror for what it is. But none of this is being addressed by the Trump administration. And I think that's why there's so much of this left-right squabbling and all these wiretaps and all this stuff, the Vault 7 information, everything being released now. And there's nothing in Vault 7 that we didn't already know was happening, but it has confirmed it. And it is interesting that the CIA let it get out there, and now everybody's got access to all these hacking tools. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. But I think a lot of this is to just try to give legitimacy to Trump and to try to keep people distracted from what's in the Podesta emails, what's going on with DynCorp, what's going on with the war on terror, and what's going on with all this human trafficking and everything that's being exposed now. They're doing everything they can to try to legitimize his presidency and keep us distracted and keep us fighting amongst each other.
And human trafficking is a huge, huge business. People don't realize how many millions go missing every year and just get sold into the trade. Some get murdered and don't come back. Most of them never get released from the trade. And this is the thing. People think that slavery, you know, just went away. Right, that you can't own a human being, that you can't treat them like dirt and they'll have no human rights and things like that. No. We live in a world where there are dark corners. And believe me when I tell you, evil will always grow in the places you refuse to look.
Yeah, and it isn't just human slavery that's going on. It isn't just the trafficking. It's the organ harvesting as well. You know, what people don't understand the value of a human body, you know, like, you know, what your organs are worth. You know, your kidneys are worth $260,000. Your eyes are worth, you know, $15,000. Your lungs are worth $110,000. Your heart's worth $150,000. Your bone marrow is worth $23,000 a gram. The average human body is worth around about $43 million on the black market just in organs, bone marrow, and blood. That's how much you are worth. So when you look at what happens in these war zones, when they go in and they take over these villages, the first resource that they harvest is the people. That's what they do. They steal as many women and children as they can. They sell the children off into slavery. They sell the women into prostitution or organ harvesting, and they sell the men off to work in factories or in mines or to have their organs harvested. This is what happens, and this has all been exposed through the Clinton emails, through the actions of DynCorp, Otpor, the companies that are involved in this. NATO's involved. There's so many things involved.
And it was DynCorp, NATO, and the UN, and the Clintons and the US military. It was like that kind of like chain around the world of human trafficking and massive connections with organized crime, I would assume.
Absolutely, and it's all been exposed by the Clinton emails, and you can see how they've set up all these companies. You can see what all these invasions have been about. You can see what Libya was actually about. It was more of basically going in there to steal 20,000 Stinger missiles, to steal all Gaddafi's gold, to steal all of his cash wealth, and to steal the $265 billion in hidden assets that he also had through Europe. That's what that was about. And then they moved the army across into Syria. They're trying to do the same through there. It's 15,000 children have had their organs harvested in Syria since the conflict started. Now, these sorts of things, you know, have been going under the radar, but now they're all coming to light. This is what a lot of the white helmet activity has been about. There's a lot of the white helmets have gone in there to do good things, but then it's what happens after dark when the other forces go in there and all the children that are taken from these war zones and put in these orphanages, what happens to them? Where do they go? You know, there's 8 million children that are go missing every year, and that's on legitimate records. That's just kidnapping and going missing from Western culture and Western cities and Western countries. This isn't even taking into account the amount of children that go missing from war zones. So, you know, when you take this into account, you take this figure into account, the amount of people that go missing from some of these war zones, you know, what we're seeing is human trafficking that's happening on an industrial scale. It really is. And it's not just for human organ harvesting as well. There's a lot of pedophile activity. I mean, what's been uncovered in Europe, you know, the recent gang that was uncovered in Europe, there were 52 people. 30 of them were police officers. The rest were politicians. They were raping children and getting it on video and all sorts of stuff. We're talking six-year-old kids, you know, being forced to have sex with animals and all sorts of horrible stuff. So this is just the tip of the iceberg. This is what's going on a global stage, you know, absolutely worldwide. People would not believe the extent of it and how far the tentacles go down in all of our societies. And all this is coming to light now. So I think that's a lot of why we're seeing this complete political circus at the moment, doing anything they can to keep people distracted because they're scared to death that people are waking up to what's happening and they're trying to give the government some form of legitimacy, you know.
They've been in this game for a very, very long time, literally invented propaganda with Edward Bernays, who was the nephew of Sigmund Freud. And now they're using very complex mind control techniques on the entire world at the same time to distract them from things that are coming to light. Okay? Now, they can't just shut everybody down. And you hear this all the time, don't you, Max? Oh, aren't you afraid of getting killed? Aren't you afraid of this, that, or the other? And it's like, nah, bro. I mean, there's the illusion of privacy. Okay? Right now I've got the curtains closed, but everything's being recorded. You know? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, right? It was always an illusion, privacy was, and I think now we have the opportunity to realize the fact that privacy is, in fact, freedom. And if you don't have privacy, you don't have freedom. So none of us are free, right? So if none of us are free, how exactly would they keep us from recognizing that? By distracting the living hell out of us with everything that you can think of, because everybody's got different tastes. What do you distract the entire world with? With a world's full of entertainment. Right? Look at what big Bollywood is, distracting all the Indians from all the colonial oppression that used to go on there and so on and so forth. You know? Look, bro, we're all under a jackboot. That's the really scary realization that is often hyped up and out of proportion because it doesn't feel like somebody's got their foot
in their boot heel on your throat right now, does it? Okay? And that's the reason why we're not reacting like, in a huge fight or flight manner. And when we take time to sit down and think very, very clearly about the enemy that we're up against, the scale of the monstrosity of the problem that we're dealing with. And then what part do I, myself, one person play in that game? All right. And I think that's a question everybody starts to, should start to ask themselves. What individual part can I play in making the world a better place, knowing what I know about this evil scumbaggery? Does that mean I keep listening to other people's radio shows who are telling me stuff that I already know and have already heard just because it's the kind of stuff that I want to hear? No. You go out and you tell that to people who ain't heard it yet, or you in some way live your life around that principle of not buying into the system, not being a part of it. You don't need to be a part of it. The universe comes out for those who've taken to jumping out of a plane without a parachute. I don't know.
Well, yeah, you get involved. You know, and how do you know some of the stuff we know and not speak out about it, not get involved? That's the thing. You know, even if you're just playing these shows to your neighbours and talking about it over the kitchen table, that's still making a difference, you know. Anything you can do to make a difference in your community, but you've got to get involved. You can't just roll over. And, you know, there is no privacy, as you say. And the release of the Vault 7 information has shown that. This is everything we've been telling people for years. Yes, your computer is spying on you. Yes, all your emails are being read. Yes, your television is spying on you. Yes, they're listening to your mobile phone. They can turn the camera on. They can turn the microphone on. They can listen to anything that's got a microphone. There is no privacy. They're tracking everything you do. We've been telling people this for years. So now it's right out there in the open. So why would you not speak out? Why would you think that keeping your head down is going to make a difference? All you're doing is capitulating to a slavery system. You know what? And if you're scared of death, well, you know, death is the only part of life that's inevitable. You know, wouldn't you prefer to live in a free world and just sit there and think that it's not going to come for you when it is? It's already come for all of us. It's already got all of us, you know. So it's about time we recognize that and stood up for what's right and stood up for freedom. You know, don't be afraid to call things out for what they are, because ultimately the world's run by people the same as you. That's what I was saying before. This Trump presidency, it's kind of brought them down from the pedestal, these politicians. It's humanized the presidency. It's humanized the political system. Politicians are just people like you, and politicians are actually the last people who should be involved in government. You know, if we're going to have government at all, we need people with good managerial skills, not people who have political motivation in what they do. You know, politics is what's caused problems with government. You know, for some reason, people equate politics with government and politicians with government. Really, it should be people with managerial skills, not politicians at all. You know, politicians are what's wrong with government. So, you know, I think it's a time of great opportunity, Vinny. I really do. I think all of this is a time of opportunity. And, you know, the fact that they're just being exposed as bumbling fools now, the fact that the media is being exposed as being the barefaced liars that they always have been, and this is a great opportunity for the independent media to actually provide a bit of stability and a bit of grounding for these people. If we could just come together and we could just put down our differences and get this common focus, like I said before, stop bickering about the details, stop trying to put each other down, stop trying to climb over each other and actually come together. This is something I've been trying to do for years. Or ever since I've been traveling around the world, I've tried to meet every single prominent figure from the independent media that I can to try to unite people, to try to get the people to see out there that all of the us who are speaking out, we're all actually on the same page. So there's no reason for you guys to squabble with each other as well. But you know, I haven't been very successful because most people tend to have an agenda, unfortunately. But I think a lot of people are seeing the need to put all this down now because things are getting pretty desperate. It doesn't really matter about personal agendas. It matters about freedom. That's what we should be focused on.
Well, in many respects, freedom is the ability to pursue your own personal agenda, right? And sometimes we focus on coming together when, in actual fact, when we're doing our own thing, that is us working in tandem with the rest of the world. Everybody's working a little bit and doing their own thing, throwing their own pebble into the pond and making their own ripples. And I think that in some ways is actually a lot more powerful than an organization. Because sometimes, what was it? I think it was Mark Twain that said, if you wanted to destroy the essence of something, create an organization. Because I think a lot of times we do try to build movements, you know, like I saw the 9/11 Truth Movement. I was involved here in New Zealand with the Dactory, the cannabis factory, right? And it just kind of is something usually behind a personality, and once that personality is gone, the ability for people to just go, okay, sweet ass, we can go, we can work together, we can do all this kind of stuff. As soon as the personality who created all of that disappears, so does the organization. And in some cases, the organizations that are there still long after the creator is gone are often run really terribly. And it's like I'm starting to get a little inkling in the back of my head that maybe organizing and having a resistance with leaders is not a good thing. Maybe everybody needs to be their own leader. Maybe everybody needs to do their own thing, and maybe nobody can tell them what that one thing is.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Absolutely. This is something that I've been saying for a long time. There are no leaders. This is why I always stepped away from that leadership position. It's why I created Full Circle Project, so people could lead themselves in their own communities. You know, I believe all people really need is a support group. You know, people that can talk to, people that are on the same page as you, people you can share ideas with, but no leaders. You know, you've got to lead yourself in your own community. Can't expect someone to come along with any type of movement and lead you to safety. You know, if we haven't adjusted our morals and we haven't adjusted, you know, what is, you know, our concept of right and wrong, what is good and bad, and we haven't refused to tolerate that which is bad in the world around us, then we're not going to get anywhere. It doesn't matter what sort of a movement anybody comes along with and where they try to lead us to. If we haven't changed what's in here, we're just going to end up back where we started. You know, but if we stop tolerating bad behavior, stop tolerating evil, whatever you want to call it, you know, stop tolerating that which is wrong and obviously wrong, and start doing the right thing in all that we do, then the world has to change around us. But no one can lead us to that, you know, and it doesn't matter, like I said, what they lead us to. If we haven't done that, well, we're just going to end up here. We're just going to end up back where we were, you know, and if we change what's in our heart and we start doing the right thing in all that we do, we don't have to change anything else. The world has to change around us. It's really simple. You know, people just can't see the forest for the trees. They want someone to come along and lead them to safety so they can just get along with their lives and continue to go to work and continue to get their pay and do all that stuff. You know, it's the fact that they even want to do that and they believe they need to do that with their lives, and the fact that they believe they can just get a newsletter that's going to tell them the world has changed, that's the problem. You know, the fact that they even believe they need someone to lead them to safety when they're not prepared to do it themselves, they're not prepared to do what is right in their own lives, that's the problem. You know, and until people can get a grasp on that, well, there's no hope for us. You know, it doesn't matter where anybody tries to lead us, people have got to change it in themselves. Then there are no leaders. They can lead themselves. Indeed, they have no choice other than to lead themselves, because once you step into that, it's a very powerful knowledge. It's a very, very powerful knowing about yourself. And you can kind of lead yourself from that point once you discover yourself, you know.
Well, nobody sits you down when you're 18 and says, you know how I used to tell you how to brush your teeth? Yeah. Well, you have to tell yourself how to do that now. You know how I used to make dinner for you? Yeah. You have to make your own dinner now. You know how I used to tell you how to go to bed at a responsible time so you get up early and not be sleep deprived? Yeah. Well, you're going to have to force yourself to go to sleep early now, and you're going to have to force yourself to get up. You're going to have to force yourself to go to your slave job. You're going to have to force yourself to do everything because you're an adult now, okay? And you can't rely on mommy or daddy in any shape or form to walk you through your day. You have to do it yourself. And I was interviewing Paul Connett, and I made this point about the fluoridation argument, is that often people are just going, please tell me a solution that means I don't have to put any effort in, that I don't have to learn anything, that I don't have to actually make any changes in my daily life, right? That's the thing. People don't want to make the effort. They don't want to feel the struggle. They don't want to feel – excuse me. They don't want to feel the pain. And I'm starting to believe that maybe people should actually start to crave being hurt. Okay. For every time you've been hurt is a great learning opportunity. And to see Trump being touted by half the truth movement, who just like, oh, here's your credibility, just with a lighter, just burns right up, and just in a flash it fire in an instant, like somebody spit gasoline over a candle full of hippies, right? It was just unfreaking believable how quick the flames just hit the ceiling on that one. For me to see it, and for me to be sort of like one of the very few people who saw it, and it's usually the very balanced individuals in the truth movement I found, the very wise ones, the ones who've been around the bend a few times, and actually just can see a scam a mile off, because you just got your head so full of scumbaggery and knowledge of it that these things appear obvious to us, don't they, Max? But not obvious to other people.
Well, yeah, I mean, and a lot of it, I think, is the psyops that have been played on them. Like I said, the monetization of YouTube, people believing their own press, people seeing the mainstream media failing and seeing an opportunity for them to become a new voice of reason for the people or whatever. I think a lot of it has been a play, but a lot of people have dropped the ball on it. They really have. A lot of people just aren't being objective about it at all. And that's a real concern. But, you know, I mean, Trump was in a unique position. You've got to admit he did have the potential to do the right thing. This is a man who came to the office with a lot of money behind him, who had an opportunity to do the right thing. And so I tried to give him the benefit of the doubt and the hope that he would, but I didn't really have a great deal of hope. And, unfortunately, everything that I predicted to be happening actually happened and unfolded pretty quickly. I said it was going to reveal itself very quickly. And it certainly has, and nothing has changed. So, you know, I don't know what it's going to take for people to see it, but hopefully they will, and hopefully they'll see it soon. But, you know, the people out there are being led in so many directions now. There's so much divide and conquer that's happening on the street. My hope is that people will put all that aside. You know, it's a great opportunity for the people of the United States to come together as one nation and step back and see what this man's going to do, because that'll put them back in control of the situation. In the moment, they're not in control of anything, and hopefully they'll see that. I mean, they never have been, but they've got an opportunity to get a little bit of control now, get a little bit of unity, see this puppet show for what it is. You know, that's about all it's gonna save things, I think. And it is a huge opportunity. Hopefully people see this as the farce that it is, and that's the only real hope we've got of moving this forward in a positive direction, you know. If people are going to believe that someone's going to come along and lead them, or that Trump's going to lead them, or anything like that, or that even anyone in the truth movement's going to lead them, that they have to do it without taking responsibility for themselves. Well, hopefully this is going to, you know, squash all of that belief, and hopefully they're going to see the need to take responsibility for themselves.
They don't want to preach that idea, because, I mean, I preach that idea. That's why I've got so few listeners and followers, you know, comparatively to somebody else who's been in as long as I have. But the ones that I have are of great quality, right? You know, just like actual people who are intelligent, who are actually living their own lives, raising their kids right, and living in a life that is counter to the way the New World Order wants them to live, like real quality people who don't need me, right? And that's the best thing. That's the kind of relationship that I wanted to have with my audience. I don't want them to need me, and I don't want me to need them. I don't want there to be any kind of like power struggle between us. If there's one thing that people need to know about the relationship between a talk radio show host and their audience, it's the perception of trust. Okay, you can either have the perception or you can have the trust. You can't have both. Because often when you're really, really trusting with people, when you tell them everything that you think, that's when they get really angry with you. That's when they reject you. That's when they throw everything else that you think that they agree with completely out the window. Now, you talked about this divide and conquer tactics. If you refuse to placate people, if you refuse to manipulate them, if you refuse to talk in a cautious manner without saying what you really feel, then your ability to have a larger audience will naturally grow. But if you don't actually value that idea in and of itself, just having a big audience, if you only want like a real quality audience, you just be honest with them, and the good ones will stay, and the ones who are judgmental, who can get offended at anything that you say, the people who would report you to the FCC and so on and so forth, they can't stand listening to 5 minutes of you before they turn it off. And that's exactly the game I'm playing.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a good game to play. I mean, really, you've just got to speak your mind and speak the truth. That's what it's all about. And who cares if you don't get it right all the time? You know, you make a mistake. That's called being human. Like you say, you can placate everybody. You can say what people want to hear. There's a lot of places that do that. There's a lot of channels out there that tell people exactly what they want to hear. They spread so much disinformation in with truth, which is exactly the way COINTEL works. There's a lot of channels that are doing that. And there's people that just speak the truth and speak their truth and offer their perspective and don't always get it right. And, you know, I'm one of them, you're one of them. You know, the honest people do that. And it is good. It is good to do, and I think people do appreciate that. And they do appreciate it. You make a mistake and you say, hey, I made a mistake. That's all good. That's what being human's about. You know, this whole thing's been a learning curve for everybody. This whole, you know, quest for truth, you know, it's been a learning curve for everybody. You know, if you listen to my shows back from 2008 and listen to what I was saying then to what I'm saying now, there's definitely been a lot of growth since then. But hey, that's fine. That's where my views were then, because that's where my level of knowledge was then. You know, it's about growth, it's about change, and if you've got the same opinion now as what you had 10 years ago, well, there's something seriously wrong, I think, because there's been a lot of information coming to the bridge between then and now. So, yeah, it's a good thing, and I think you're right. People do appreciate the truth, and they do appreciate people just speaking their mind and not placating the audience and not just saying what people want to hear. I mean, you can put on white robes and tell people what they want to hear or what we like and take all the donations we want. It's not really going to get anywhere. It's not going to bring about freedom or truth. So, you know, I think it's up to people to judge with their own hearts who's telling them the truth and who isn't, and listen with their hearts to what people have to say. And it doesn't matter if people get it wrong sometimes. There's still a lot of good stuff that they've done before. So, you know, give people a bit of a break.
And on that note, I also wanted to remind people that American Freedom Radio is listener supported as well. They've got a new Patreon page and a nice little video that I made for them, and it's really good stuff. So American Freedom Radio gave me this gig, right? He's given so many people their first gig that it's just like half the truth movement, you know, the good and the bad. wouldn't be in it if it wasn't for the guy Danny Romero at this network. And I encourage people to go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and if they want to give $1 a month, $2 a month, $5 a month, you got $5 million a month you want to give in there, we're not going to argue. But other than that, I wanted to actually wind that back a bit. Going back to this divide and conquer thing and the importance of bringing people together. Now, it's on the points you agree that you can come together and collaborate, and on the points you disagree, sometimes you can leave those debates just for another time, like a time that we're not under the threat of enslavement and subsequent extermination by a cabal of ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery, perchance. You know, some other time. We can debate the flat earth and so on and so forth. However, right now, instantly recuse myself, because that's the same argument you hear from everybody else. Oh, it's not time to talk about the pedophilia. Oh, it's not time to talk about the mass surveillance. Oh, it's not time to talk about 9/11. Look, no time's good to talk about something, is it? Is it? Think about it.
Well, we need to act, you know. We need to act. Stop complying with this system. Stop complying with our own enslavement, you know. And that's the thing, you know. We talk about all this stuff, but we comply with it all. You know, we use the mobile phones. We use the credit cards. We comply with all of this slavery system, all of this surveillance system. We do all the stuff they know is using, you know, to surveil us. They do all this, you know, we do all this stuff we know is not working in our best interest, but we do it anyway. You know, we allow this evil to exist in the world. We tolerate all these wars. We tolerate being taxed. We tolerate our government putting in surveillance systems in our own communities and putting cameras everywhere and parking meters everywhere. We just go along with it all. That's the problem. We do, because we live in divided communities. So, yeah, let's agree to disagree on all the small points. Let's agree to have different belief systems. Let's agree to, you know, not argue about what shape the earth is. It doesn't matter for now. Let's get the freedom to find out what it is. Let's get the freedom to, you know, not be in the position that we're in. And we're only going to get that from respecting each other. So let's have a little bit of focus there. You know, we're not getting any of that. It doesn't matter about all the other stuff. It's all just part of the divide and conquer strategy. And we've got to agree to disagree on things. We've got to allow people to think differently to us and respect each other in our differences. It's important that we do. So, you know, yeah, that's what we have to do, Vinny, absolutely.
Well, we can't assume who each other is and what each other thinks because we're not omnipotent, right? That would be something that would belong to a god. And according to the dictionary, a god is a fictional creation of man. And there is no other definition for it.
You're going to get a bit of hate mail from that one, brother.
One can only hope. Because, I don't know. It's just, why be worried? I get this, what's that phrase? Walking on eggshells. You ever hear that phrase, bro? I don't want to be around people where I have to walk on eggshells. I think maybe that's why my birthday at Christmas, like, it's just so uncomfortable for me because I can't just say what I think anymore. All of a sudden, I'm not a talk radio show host who's, like, spoken to some of the wisest mystics and professors and lawyers and doctors and things like that and activists in the world for, like, half a decade. I'm not that. No, I'm little brother Vinny. Right. And I'm sitting here having these conversations about like different brands of alcohol and stuff like that. And I'm like tearing my follicles out, bro. I can't stand it. It hurts me. It hurts me in my brain places when I hear conversations that are not worth my brain's functioning capacity. It just switches off. It turns into this like, it's like the dark dimension from Doctor Strange, bro. Like all of a sudden the brain just goes, it no longer functions. It's like the red mist. The anger, the rage, the sense of rejection of any kind of rational thought just compels me to not behave myself, to not be happy. It makes me feel like a slave. And I understand that my audience feels this way. A lot of people are like, they're really depressed because of how their family treats them. They feel really alone because of how their workmates treat them. They feel really in pain and at loss, and they don't know what to do in their lives. But when they listen to this show and they hear stories of woe from dudes who've gone through way worse shit than they're going through right now, they go, man, the Vinnie Eastwood show made me feel better. It was great. See, that's the gift, ladies and gentlemen. You don't have to pay for it. But it's there for you nonetheless, and it's the same thing with Max. Everybody's got some kind of gift that they can give into the pool of humanity that the internet has now given us the ability to create, all right? And I think that everybody's got some kind of gift to contribute to the greater whole. White blood cells don't wish they were red blood cells, and vice versa, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it is. It is. I mean, everybody has got something to offer, and it's about feeling positive. And that's again what I put Full Circle Project together for, so you can find a support group in your area. You know, because I meet a lot of people who say they've got no one to talk to, their family doesn't understand them, their friends don't understand them, they feel alone. So that's what it's about. It's just about getting that support group. You know, and even if it's just an online group, but, you know, it's better if you can actually meet people in the flesh and actually get that physical support around you. But even if you just start online, I mean, reach out to people because there's a lot of people out there who feel the same way, who just need that support group around them, who need someone to talk to who's on their level, need to know that other people understand how they feel. So get out there and get amongst it. Now, you can make a difference if you get involved, but you've got to choose to. You've got to take that step yourself. So that's what we've created Full Circle Project for. So hopefully people will get involved now. The website for that is fullcircleproject.net. So do look for that. Log on to the Community Connector and do a search for people in your area and get involved. Get involved on the ground. You'll find that there's issues in your community that you can deal with. you'll find that there's ways you can approach your council members and just stir the hornet's nest a little bit, you know, question authority a little bit, do it in the right way. There's ways we can get through this if you get involved on the ground. And that's the only way we're going to make a difference. People have got to get involved in the ground. Get out there and do what you can in your community. Even if you just go and start a community garden or go and join a community garden and just start talking to people, start sharing information with people, it all makes a difference. So yeah, don't think that you're impotent. Don't think that you can't make a difference. Don't think that there's people out there who don't feel the same as you do, because there's millions of them. You just got to go out and find them.
Yeah, you are what you believe you are. Say, I powerful. Don't say, I can't.
Yeah, very good, very, very good.
Yeah, I can because nobody wants to, be seen as a cunt. Now, Max, thank you very much for coming on the show with me this evening. I would like you to give out your website and perhaps a little brief farewell message to everybody.
Yeah, well, my website is thecrowhouse.com. I'm currently in Hawaii at the moment doing some combo workshops, but I'm speaking at the Free Your Mind conference in Philadelphia on the 7th and 9th of April, if anybody wants to come along to that. I'm also speaking in California at Bear's Paw on the 23rd. So I hope to see you there. Yeah, thecrowhouse.com, you'll find out everything about me there.
All right. Thanks, Max Egan. Everybody, also go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Donate through the PayPal, the Patreon, and the Kiwi Bank, and we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening and sharing your attention and your love and your support and your sharing of the shows and everything like that. I'm very grateful. You know that I am. Catch you later.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
And I hope people support American Freedom Radio. And I hope people vote with their dollars and really understand the value of having American Freedom Radio. Because that's my family. If you love me at all, Jack Blood, support American Freedom Radio. Like, my family has literally disowned me in American Freedom Radio. Danny and Don and those guys, those are my actual family. So please, please support these guys because they have all the technology, they have all these great things that they're gonna do, but obviously they can't do it all by themselves. So not only would I like to see you support them, I'd like to see you retweet them and repost them and really get involved and get on the bandwagon, so to speak, on doing that do-it-yourself promotion, because they're a do-it-yourself radio network, and we just need that so much.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship.
Or be quiet.
Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio and service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics,
no taboo topics,
no fear of doom,
no fear of doom.
We are
American Freedom Radio,
American Freedom Radio.